Hi, Cody. Oh, wait. Oh, shit. I gotta do Twitch, too. 1 second. I can cut this out. I know basic editing.
No. Leave it in.
Dude, my girlfriend was like, oh, my God, I'm gonna miss the stream. Oh, no.
Yeah, she's like our only supporter.
The only one that consistently watches.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, we'll get like one of the artist's friends on here, but that's about it.
Yeah, when we did Till Now, there were like 11 people watching or something.
Yeah, that was kind of wild.
But anyway. Hi, Cody.
I apologize. I don't watch a lot of Twitch. Hi, Jackson.
How are you doing today?
I am here. And that's pretty much all I got.
Hell yeah.
How are you, Jackson?
I'm doing good. I'm getting over COVID, which really sucked. I thought I was dying. Like, I saw the light, everything got calm, stuff like that. But I was like, nah, I don't fuck with that. So I didn't really go into the light. But yeah, it's going. How are you doing, Rumble?
I'm also getting over being sick. It wasn't COVID, but it did kick my ass. And now I have to sing tonight. So that's awesome. I can't wait.
Okay. Well, Cody, you released an EP recently. Tell us a little bit about that.
I sure did, Jackson. It's called I Don't Want to Be Here Anymore, and it's about 2022. The conceit of that whole album is 2022 fucking sucked. I don't know about you guys, but it honestly was more mentally taxing than 2020. And my therapist said I can't release a record called I think the original working title was I Want to Die. No, it was some play on words. It was supposed to be an A section and a B section. But it just turned into I Don't Want to Be Here Anymore. So if you're a fan of janky lo-fi bedroom pop that does none of the standard bedroom pop, I'm your guy.
Rumble, did you check it out, homie?
I did check it out, homie. I checked it out. I checked it out about half an hour before this.
Hell yeah.
I did like it. I did thoroughly enjoy it. That was very well.
Did you have any thoughts?
Well produced.
Any thoughts? Because I fucking hate all my music. So I would love to like know what somebody who enjoyed it gets out of it.
Definitely the production. I've been learning more about production lately, and I thought the production on it sounded really good.
Thank you.
It was just there was something very charming about it, and that I don't really know how to put my finger on. But it was just like it was just a good vibe. I mean, it was sad. Don't get me wrong; the songs were kind of sad, but outside of that,
it's all good. Yeah, I ran into a problem when I was like 19, where I was living in a studio since 16. So I am so far removed from like trying to make good music for myself that it's kind of like a little break, and I feel like that is kind of what people get out of it. Is like there's really weird stuff done moderately well, and I think that's the Cody.
Froze a little bit.
Oh, there he is. He's back.
Hi. All right, I'm on my internet. I was saying that the Cody Etc. brand is just weird music done 7 out of 10. So I feel like that's the goal.
Awesome. Well, we're fluctuating between 1 and 2 viewers, and I just like to remind the chat, if you have any questions, feel free to chime in, because we're all about audience participation.
Hell yeah.
I wanted to say, and I brought this up to you when you showed me your EP, it really reminds me of Smashing Pumpkins' Adore, that record, because it's kind of it has a charm to it, but it's very, like you said, like bedroom emo pop, a lot of synthesizers. But like it, one thing that really reminds me of is the song Perfect, if you've heard that before. Like it's it has kind of a sweet vibe to it, but there's a very ominous tone behind it. And yeah. that's something really reminded me of.
Thank you. Yeah. I was listening to a lot of Mountain Goats and Kanye while I was making this. And I feel like it's
what a I'm
Jewish, I'm allowed to listen to Kanye.
Nah, man, fair enough.
Everything past the life of Pablo, he lost me, man. I just can't do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's Yeezus is like my go-to of just like weird bullshit industrial.
Dude, if you're gonna tell me Jesus is King is not musical masterpiece.
I will say, even through all of his bullshit, he has always retained that he is a phenomenal producer in terms of like composition and just all the sounds he makes. Like, he can definitely build a good song. Can he still write a good song? I don't know, man.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe he needs to just like focus on production more. As if he's going to sit in on this podcast and take our advice.
Yo, we're dealing with 2023 Kanye. Like, this is absolutely a dude who might just be hitting random on Twitch and just stumble upon this and be like, these motherfuckers are criticizing me. I'll show them. I'll show the whole fucking world. I'll show this whole Jewish media podcast.
He is our one viewer right now. It's Kanye West.
Oh my god. Hi, Kanye.
We summoned him.
Shout out my boy Yeezy.
Gosh, I have some medication recommendations that help me not to be Kanye. If you want to message me, Kanye, I can definitely help you out with that. But anyway,
I don't pay a lot of attention to pop culture because I think that like people go out of their way to like worship. But nothing in pop culture will ever be funnier to me than the Kanye and Pete Davidson beef. It's just the funniest situation.
And it was the funniest thing ever because Pete was just minding his own business and Kanye was like, yo, I'm gonna beat your ass. I'm gonna kill you. And it's like, oh my god. He would just like make Instagram posts constantly just talking mad shit and Pete's like not even responding.
Imagine being that mad at some dopey kid from Staten Island with Crohn's disease, dude. Like, calm down.
Yeah, but anyway, so you kind of mentioned about how you wrote the album about 2022. Are there any... Can you divulge a little bit more detailed, like, what are some of the things you were feeling and some of the themes you were kind of talking about?
Because of what I do work-wise, I can't give, like, exact names or anything on, who inspired some of these songs, but I can tell you, like, Hometime was actually a 2020 cut. There's like three songs on the record that I repurposed from 2020 because it was just very much the same like level of isolation socially for me and mentally. And Hometime was very much influenced by watching my dad angrily scrolling Tinder while getting cuckolded and trying to process that relationship that my dad was going through. As I am growing up and turning into the ages of my dad that I have as a memory of him. Like, I don't know about y'all, but a lot of my memories from like 5 to 12 are all I got because of the brain damage that drugs do. So a lot of what my dad was is a lot of what I'm seeing in the mirror, including like just occasional glances and seeing the dude that used to beat the shit out of me is like wild. So like the song Home Time is a lot of like processing my dad's emotions as in a relationship and trying to recontextualize my emotions in a relationship about that. And I honestly think it's a fucking mom. I've got a lot of those songs that are just about isolation. My guitar player, Noah Burns, was talking about how he related to a lot of the songs that we were repurposing for The Delightful Humans, which is my current side band. And one of the strongest emotions he was latching onto was that sense of like just desolate isolation. And I feel like that's the entire motif record is just, I don't want to be here. I'm tired of like sitting in this fucking room all by myself with nothing else going on.
Yeah, I totally get that. And I can definitely relate. I'm kind of the opposite where like from like 5 to 12, I barely remember anything just because of a mix of child abuse and domestic violence in my life. So like, I can kind of relate to that. It's really weird. Childhood stuff can just fuck you up forever.
What is the oldest that you got, like, still abused? Because mine was, the last time my dad choked me out was 16.
Oh my gosh. No, it was more of a thing where, like, so my dad and my stepmom were kind of hated each other. So my stepmom hated me, and my dad hated my stepsister, and they basically did everything they could to make our lives miserable every time I was there. I didn't live with them full time, so I guess I had that. But, yeah, it was just a lot of, like, what am I doing wrong besides just being a kid? So, like, I can definitely relate to you there.
I'm sorry that happened to you, but I appreciate the connection that we have on that.
Yeah, I get that for sure. Rumble, do you have any childhood trauma?
Man, no. Sorry, guys. No, I was I was raised in a pretty all right house. You know, we had some money problems, but who doesn't? You know, I've definitely, as I've gotten older, being forced into religion definitely caused some problems for me, but nothing like what you're talking about now. And hearing P for in that context makes me feel bad for assuming the name was a Remo Drive reference. You know their song "You're Killing Me."
Hell yeah!
I don't want her anymore.
All right, that's all we can sing before we get the chat taken down.
That's why when you two were talking, I just shut the fuck up. I don't have much to add to that.
I am a clown parading my trauma. You can do whatever you want, bud.
I wrote this in the little notes I gave you, but Home Time actually reminded me of White Rabbit in terms of like the overall atmosphere and kind of the tone to it. Is there any connection between the two songs?
Home Time is definitely my most dramatic song on that EP. I have my EP from last year, which was my last time on this show, which, by the way, I appreciate that you evolved your twink into an otter. It's good to see, like, evolutions like that.
Are they talking about me?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a joke for the long-time listeners. I know there's three of us.
Yeah.
So, my last record...
Did you call?
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like most people would refer to me as a bear, but I'll take it, I guess.
I've really got, like, the chest up region, and I feel like it's gut down that really defines a bear.
Oh, I see. I just like people. Yeah. I'm 6'4", and I'm
shit.
Like 180 pounds. Like I'm a pretty fucking large individual.
Man, this chat, like, You look like a Discord kitten, if I'm being completely honest, from just like this video.
Yeah, it's very slimming.
Thank you.
So I did not get that from you.
You've got a whole figure eight going on our end.
After several months of beating myself up over my weight, that's very nice to hear.
We'll circle back to that trauma, because oh boy, do I have that in spades.
All right.
So we're talking about the relationship between White Rabbit and Home Time. So Home Time is like my most overproduced song on this record. I definitely played a lot with the string sections and melody, which I feel White Rabbit, the orchestral version from that last record, really benefited from, of just like playing with the full palette of my DAW. And because that last record was very Baroque pop, and this one is more like a sophomore sequel to it, and it's me trying to figure out where I'm going next. And I think Home Time, it has that most connection of me trying to fill it out, especially because half the electric guitar takes for that song didn't really work. So I just kind of scrapped them all and turned it into an orchestral record, an orchestral piece. And I think that's where a lot of that comes from.
You know, right. What's crazy is I actually really like the live version of Home Time from what I've heard. I know it's not as filled out, but I really like the rawness of hearing it live. Same with a lot of the songs on this EP. There's definitely, I really like the orchestral elements, but I think they also hold up very well in a more raw and live atmosphere as well.
Yeah. I've got one more solo EP I'm knocking out this year. And then I think I'm starting next year with a acoustic re-recordings of all the songs from like the past couple years. Just because I was really hiding behind a lot of production on everything I've ever done. So I think I'm going to be stripping down all my songs back to style of rehash, which is what the people want. And I don't really give a shit what the people want, but right now I'm doing music full time, so I kind of got to make some money on this. And the consensus seems to be I flourish when it's just depression and acoustic guitar.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't think I've ever... I don't find myself in Cape Coral often, and I don't think I've ever gotten a chance to see you live, but I'd really like to.
I haven't gotten to see you live either. I think I caught you one time when I was hanging out at Ollie's before my own gig, and you guys were like, oh,
yeah.
Man, you sticking around? And I was like, absolutely not, and then left.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
It'll happen one of these days. We'll see. I'm going to be down in Cape Coral with... Neverless in October.
I think so you guys are over at Rackham's.
It's part of the 239 Fest. I don't know where we're playing, but I know I'm going to be there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's probably going to be at that shitty outdoor Rackham stage, but
love it.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Love it. Rackham's is a very cool place.
I haven't gotten to play there yet.
Cover your drink.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, yeah.
My friend Pete Flower is about 7 feet tall, and he got roofied there. Like, Jesus. That's the level of gross going on there. Oh, man, this is going to get clipped out, and then I'm never going to get to play Rackham's again. Oh.
Dude, like, I've been to a couple shows there, and just the amount of sleaze just oozing out of that place, and just grossness is just... Yikes, but apparently a lot of the bands around here like it, and I don't know why, but anyway, yeah.
If you're a real band, Andy will actually give you a bar split.
Oh,
that's a little inside baseball, but the objective money coming in from a Rackham show, if you're actually a big pull, is greater than like Ollie's, which is a door split. And granted, we're able to have people that are 18 years old there and not worry about like, oh, hey, is this person going to get drugged? But the counter to that is that fans are walking away with like $25. So it's.
Yeah, it's, you know. There's no good answer.
Yeah. And yeah, I as a tour manager now, I know a lot about how that stuff goes on, and it is a little bit unfortunate, but I think Ollie's is doing a lot better now. Like, all the shows I've been to since the GoFundMe have been, like, packed, though I've been to some killer lineups, but I don't know, it seems to be doing a lot better than it was.
Yeah, like the Christian Metalcore show that you were at.
Oh, I wasn't there. My mom wasn't doing well.
I'm sorry to hear. They recently sent me a follow request, and I saw you were following them, so that's the connection I made. And I assumed, and you know what that does, ass out of you and me, it happens.
Yeah, I met them, and I saw them at Hangar 7 in Lake City, which is another really cool place. They actually, I think they might be going on a little tour with Burn Absolute, who I'm their guy, and I think they want to hire me for those dates, so I think that's probably the connection there.
Fuck yeah. I have a quick question. Since you've seen them, how does the pit at a Christian metalcore show work?
It goes fucking crazy. Like, it's not even a metalcore, it's like a Christian hardcore band, and this guy, he wears a Vikings jersey, and he just goes ham on the microphone. Like, when he came up, like, he looks like a youth Christian pastor, but he's like, okay, Jesus can save you. Now open up this fucking pit. And it's just the craziest shit ever. Like, at first, that's awesome. Like, okay, this is kind of cheesy, but he had me in the pit, man. I had a broken foot, but I was headbanging and stuff.
John was telling me that people were still throwing up the devil horns at that, and that made my day.
Yeah, it was, and like right after them was Catcher in the Rye, and they're like satanic vampire hunters. So like, like they have like a pentagram on their bass drum. So it was just the funniest thing ever. But yeah, I love the guys in Catcher in the Rye. They're really cool. Same with Pine Drape. It was a fucking fun lineup on that little tour.
Fuck yeah.
I want to put together a battle of the bands, but every band, like, represents a different religion. Just be like, which religion is best? Which one makes the best music?
I don't know any Islam bands, to be honest.
Oh, I'm sure they're out there.
Yeah. We gotta find a Buddhist beatdown band.
Buddhist beatdown. That could actually be a good band name, not gonna lie.
Buddhist beatdown.
Let's see. We gotta find a Zoroastrian post-hardcore. That's the religion Freddie Mercury was, where it's like a East African religion where, like, it's kind of like a pseudo-Christianity, but you go through and, like, have vultures eat your bones after you die. Religion is my autistic interest. I do apologize.
Interesting.
We've got Burned at the Stake for the Satanists.
Oh, absolutely. I just did a show with them, and they're, I managed to queue up Dancing Queen's intro on how's like Last Hail Satan. So it was just, Satan! And that's the only thing keeping me alive right now is joy from that.
That's pretty good.
It was funny. I was at the Census Fail show at House of Blues, and they're like post-hardcore, emo, that kind of stuff. And during their set change, I was right up front, and they played the song from Barbie, you know, the Matchbox 20 song. I want to push you around, like, and it was just the funniest shit ever how that song has become mainstream again. Cause, like, my mom has been obsessed with Matchbox 20, like, her entire life and my entire life. Yeah. So it's funny hearing that come to prominence.
Dude, I fucking love Matchbox 20.
They're really good.
There's so much good shit in that, like 90s and 2000s pop rock. Like, oh, there's just some good shit in there.
Now, the question is, Matchbox 20, do you think Rob's best work was with Santana or in his original band?
Ooh. Yeah, that's hard to say.
Here
we go. That's the matchup. We're going Push You Around versus Smooth.
I haven't listened enough to be able to say, but my mom really likes Rob Thomas's original music as a solo artist.
Hard.
Yeah, I mean, they're hard to compare for me personally. Like they're good for different reasons, you know. My personal favorite band in that realm is Counting Crows.
Oh,
God, I love Counting Crows.
Fuck yeah. The song on the, it's funny that we're talking about like 90s pop rock bullshit. The song Bad Guy was definitely my Goo Goo Dolls phase of like listening and trying to like write a song in that style. And live, it definitely works a lot better than the album version does for like getting that whole like up tempo. We're gonna have like all everybody singing the chorus, and it's gonna be about bullshit.
Yeah,
I like that one.
In high school, we had to do a presentation on a piece of art, and this guy did a presentation on Iris by Goo Goo Dolls.
Yes.
And it sounds cool, but if you do a PowerPoint on a song, it instantly loses all coolness. And I was getting some serious secondhand embarrassment just because he was like, here's how this song relates to me, because nobody really sees the real me. And I'm like,
I was a music major. Like, my entire life was just cringe analysis of my favorite songs. Even my English papers were just me being like, Nirvana. What influenced them according to Kurt Cobain's diaries? And my English teacher being like, oh, actually the Pixies didn't pick up until after Nirvana. It's like, actually
your voice is cutting out, which kind of makes it funnier.
Puberty has only been kind to me in the past 2 years.
But I did a slam poetry unit, and I did BYOB by System of a Down. So I can't really talk shit.
Oh,
and
no,
I completely misunderstood the meaning too. So like it was just bad, dude.
Forgive me if I'm wrong, but that's the Why Do They Always Send the Poor song, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I get a sneak peek of this dramatic reading?
I honestly couldn't tell you because I don't remember the lyrics.
You know,
can I just get the
this picture? It's the stereotypical.
Why do they always send the poor?
What's the deal with always sending the poor?
Yeah, and then you have to add. I'm still have very prepubescent voice, but you have to add extra squeakiness to that. Because apparently my voice was changing to something. I just don't know what.
That's bad.
But, my voice is going to get so deep. I'm going to have a podcast voice. And now I just have to edit the fuck out of it and compress it. But,
what's up?
Do you have any college cringe?
Do I? No, man. I never went to college.
You didn't waste $40,000?
Actually, well, here's the funny thing about that. You might think that I'm older than I actually am. Like, how old do you think I am?
22, 24.
I'm 19.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I'm turning 20. I'm turning 20 in like a month.
Oh no.
Exactly 1 month. But no,
I have to cut actually out that thing I just said because people take it serious.
No, I graduated. Yeah, right? That's commonplace here, Jackson. You're okay. You're all right in this community.
I do like pop punk.
Start playing Smash Bros.
But no, I graduated when I was 16. I graduated from high school 2 years early, and I was like, you know what? I'm already in school. I'm going to take a year off before I go to college. And I had like my whole plan laid out for what I was going to do in college. And then I ended up joining Send and Delete, and I was like,
Hell yeah.
I'm
living
like,
that post-emo life.
Yeah, and I'm now like I've gone on two, and I don't have a job. So that's one.
Yeah, I'm in 10,000 in debt, and 5 years later, I have no degree. So we vibing, bro.
Hell yeah.
I don't have a degree. I basically just drank my entire second year. And the only class I passed was one class I drank with the professor after class, and the other one I spoke to with the professor after class. And those are my only two A's in college.
Yeah, I actually got dean list my first semester of college, even though I just day drank, night drank, weekend drank, weekday drank. And then it all culminated in me just crying every night at 5 a.m. in the library because I slept. And I didn't even go to class. And I was getting A's. Like, I slept from, like, 5 a.m. to noon, and I went to the library from, like, 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. to do my classes. And it was just the weirdest thing. And now I go to college from home because I cannot be trusted with my own facilities.
What was the heaviest liquor that you drank in class? I drank a 9 Loco one time in my music theory class, which a 9 Loco is a 4 Loco with a 5-hour energy to bring back that class in the early 2000s.
Bullshit. Oh my gosh. He said, oh shit.
Okay, my beat.
Okay, well, to be honest, so like my main vice was the fact that when you're in a big college town, they have parties and you pay $5 and you can drink all you want.
Yeah.
And they expect you, okay, you're like 19, you'll only drink a couple beers. No, no, no. I drink 14 beers and 3 Jello shots and 4 vodka shots. And then I threw up in the community sink at my door. So my friend who will remain nameless just because they're like a teacher now, we're in an Uber and he was like, you gotta pull over, man. And he was like, and the Uber driver is like, why? Just pull over. And they opened the door and he just threw up right in the middle of the street. It was the funniest shit ever. But that's, I'm not good into that debauchery anymore. Like, I haven't drank since I was on tour, but I did make my own drink where I had I had Hornitos, Monster Energy, and Mountain Dew Code Red. And I drank at like noon.
Holy shit. College sounds like a fucking trip. My my oldest brother is the only one of us who went to college. And dude, just like some of the stories he came back with, absolutely nuts. And like, he didn't tell me a lot. Like, when he was in college, I was like 12 or 13. So he didn't tell me a lot of it back then. But recently, he started telling me some shit from college. He's like, yeah, dude, I ended up lost. I told my friends I was on some nature trail, and there wasn't a nature trail on campus. I think I accidentally did meth once, and I was like, how do you accidentally do meth once?
Yep.
I got really lucky that COVID happened, to be honest, because I got sent home and I basically detoxed, because like, it started off small, like, okay, I'm gonna just drink on Saturdays or whatever when we go to parties. And then like, we got an alcohol plug that got us beer, and then it's like, okay, I did my class, time to drink. Okay, before class, time to drink. So, like, I was getting real close to alcoholism levels, and then COVID saved me because, like, my mom wasn't about to have me passing out drunk every night and smoking weed constantly. Now I just smoke weed a little bit.
Oh, dude, I was there, too, post-COVID. I mean, Jackson knows. I don't know if Cody... Dude, 4 Locos were my... I was getting crunk on them shits. Constantly.
Yeah.
Like, Jackson says he was close as an alcoholic. I think I was averaging around 5 or 6 Four Locos a day. My record in a day. And then I drove home.
Hell yeah.
But no, I've been sober for a little over a year now. Pasco
County has a problem with them.
Oh, Pinellas County has a problem with me.
Pinellas County has a problem with them, yeah.
You said sober, like, are you working the program or?
No, I got busted a little over a year ago. Now, I didn't want to go back to jail. So I was like, all right, that's it. I'm done. Because it's not like if someone over 20 gets arrested for a DUI, they're still allowed to drink. But like if I drank after getting busted for a DUI and they tested me, that's it. I'm back to not running that risk. So I haven't drank or smoked nothing in my ciggies for over a year now.
Fucking congrats, man. I have been sober asterisk since December 20th.
Hell yeah.
I did like AA for a little bit. But there's seeing like a 70-year-old man get in my face and be like, I haven't had a drop of drinking, sir, in 30 years. I've outlived three of my lives and still didn't drink about it. Pew. Like, I would rather be in a pile of my own shit and puke right now than listen to you.
Yeah, so, no, that doesn't sound pleasant.
I found my higher power to be, if I don't drink, I don't have to go to AA. And that's better than God ever worked for me.
Yeah,
I recently found that.
Oh shit! Am I going first?
Sorry.
Okay,
I can go first.
I'm going first. So when you get away, they make you take this little like 3-day class about, you know, the dangers of alcohol and whatnot. And at the beginning of the class, or like a couple days before, they make you fill out this like long ass questionnaire. And then they make you do an interview about your drinking habits, and they determine whether or not they think you. Then, dude, you better believe I lied right through my teeth to that woman, because if I needed treatment, that was coming out of my pocket. And I was nuts.
Oh, that was me on the suicide hotline the night that I had to get sober. I was just like, do we have to send cops out right now? It's like, no. Can I just check into Souls Care tomorrow? And it's like, no, you can't unless you want the cops there. And it's like, I'd rather not. Good night.
Yeah,
I get that. I have really bad anxiety, and I used to have to smoke weed to fall asleep, and I used to have to smoke weed to just go to shows in general, and I used to get high off my ass at Always Pub, like, every weekend, but, to where, like, I was, like, drooling, but, I also did that on tour, too, Rumble Remembers, but,
yeah,
I couldn't even walk, but, I realized that weed gives me terrible, terrible night terrors, like, the most grotesque, gory shit you could ever think of, and like your worst nightmare happening to you every night, to where like I was just afraid of falling asleep, and I stopped smoking weed, and they stopped. So I'm like, okay, maybe I shouldn't smoke weed anymore, and I didn't for like weeks, and then last night I just smoked a little bowl, and then today I got a message, hey, by the way, you need a drug test for this new job.
That's bullshit.
Like the day after I smoked weed for the first time in weeks, hey, you're gonna need to do a drug test in the next week or so, by the way. Like,
your hiring manager at the other job is you were number two on this.
Yeah, they suck.
That's right.
Anyway,
dude. I just got offered a show on Thanksgiving, like currently. And I'm like, I don't know if I can do that. I can't do that to my family, bro. I was listening to you just tonight, I promise. It's a cover gig thing. It's actually like a week long thing. Down in Key West. I don't want to disclose too many details, so I'm not gonna tell you who it's with or whatever. But man, I don't know. Now I got something to chew on. I was listening, though. I promise. I was just, like, reading that text, and I was like, are you shitting me?
Rumble's got to play bass in the Jimmy Buffett tribute.
Does it rhyme with J. Lily Trio?
No, actually, it's not. It's not Jordan. No. But, no, apparently they put you up for, like, a week, and they give you food and shit, and then at the end of the week, they give you a fuck ton of money.
I mean, but I can learn to play bass real quick.
I'll just go up to my parents and be like, hey, we're doing Thanksgiving.
In Key West.
The previous one. I will not be here. Oh, yeah, you guys can go to Key West. We can have Thanksgiving down there.
Just smuggle them into the hotel room like you do a dog.
It's funny, though, because Jordan offered me this festival he's putting on. He's like, man, you can drink and eat all day, and we'll even pay you. And I'm like, dog, you had me a drink all day, brother. Yeah, and I'll get paid to drink? Holy shit.
Is that the blues festival thing that he's doing?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, dude, he's expecting a pretty fucking big crowd, and dude, I'm fucking mad at him. He was like, dude, next time I have a big festival, you know, do parking or whatever. And I was like, cool. And then he didn't.
Well,
I think that's the worst thing about sobriety is that because, like, a lot of the BTS work is like, oh man, we'll comp you drinks and stuff. Like, you're missing, especially with how I used to drink, I'm missing out on like $50 worth of amenities on my charges.
No, for real. Like, I do this cover gig at this local bar, like, right near my house. And they don't pay, like, great compared to drinking as much as you want. And I'm like, man, I wish that affected me at all.
Yeah. Like, I use, like, especially because, like, with some of the open mics I host, it was shit pay. Like, there's a point where when Ollie's was, like, really, really bad, that I was making $20 for a 4-hour like open mic. Oof. Compensation was that I could build a wall out of PBRs after I got done. And it was not, let's see, 6 by 6, 36 times 2. What? I'm not getting caught in that $72 worth of PBRs reflected in my pay.
Dude, fair enough.
Yeah, I wish I could do more shows at.
I clean that bar out of their coke, though, when I play there. I have so many.
My nice guy shows have just turned into me, like, eating chicken wings for a week afterwards.
I wish I could do more shows at Ollie's, but it's just, like, my rate is kind of my rate now, and it's just not fair to bands to, like. Like, I give a decent discount just because I live, like, 5 minutes down the street. But still, man, it's like if a band makes $50-$70 to Ollie's, I'm not going to charge them $150. Like, come on, man. But I fucking hate driving. It fucking sucks.
Yeah.
I read your article. I don't know how you're feeling.
Yeah. I hope I wasn't too much of a negative Nelly on that article. It's just, like, I feel like it comes to, like, every aspect of the music industry. You have influencers who are like, here's what a day in the life is like. And it's just nothing like what a day in the life is like. Like, no, dude, I am sleeping in the van eating 7-Eleven hot dogs at 2 a.m., bro. You have no idea what my life is like.
Yeah, dude, that tour with Neverless completely changed my perception. Like, it was going to be glamorous or anything. What's up?
You guys are doing it right, though. Like, that's honestly, now that I've lost some of my bigger gigs thanks to COVID, I am honestly regretting the fact that I didn't hop in the van when I was younger, because, like, I turned down tours, and it's a lot easier when you're, like, 18, 19 to, like, curl up with your best friend in the back of a shitty little rental van just so you don't die from warmth than it is when you're 26 and have back problems. And I thought I had back problems at 19. It only gets worse.
Yeah, like, honestly, the Neverless tour was kind of glamorous. Like, when I went on tour with Burn Absolute, we didn't stay at a hotel once. Like, and we had six people in that van, too. So, like, one of the homies was sleeping on the floor in between the seats. I got my own row because I'm special and I had a broken foot. But, yeah, dude, it wasn't that bad, though, because, like, we stayed at Love's and they have, like, clean bathrooms, so... Man, I fucked up that Love's bathroom, bro. Fucking people were walking out of there like this with their shirt over their nose. Like, man, those 7-Eleven hot dogs, they be hitting.
Dude.
Especially like the cheddar jalapeno ones.
Yeah. That's like, the tour with Send and Delete and Sincerely Yours that we went out on recently. That was our first out of state, and the stretch where we were on the road nonstop was only 4 days, but no, we were barely eating. Jordan Egan got the front seats to sleep, got the whole first row, and Connor, he was able to, you know, sit in between the front seats and the row I was sleeping on. Dude, I woke up with my foot, like, on his chin once because I, like, rolled the wrong way.
Oh, my God.
And then Mikey and Jonas were in the row to sleep pretty much upright, which, dude, Mikey was not happy about. But, you know, I'm the tallest one, so that's not my fucking... I'm the tallest one, and I have scoliosis.
That's the butt, y'all.
What's up?
That's the butt, y'all.
I did the dumbest shit on the Burn Absolute tour. I had like three bands hire me the first night, so I was making some decent bank. But like, they're pretty used to my turnaround time, which is like within 12 hours. So like, I was up all night, and I had an air mattress. But by the time I was done with everything, it was like 6 a.m. and I didn't want to wake anybody up. So I just laid down on the deflated air mattress with a blanket. And they're like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? I didn't want to wake anybody. Just wake us up, dude. Like, it's a whole tour. Like, you don't need to, like, eventually I learned to just say fuck them and just do what I need to do. But I was like, oh, I can't wake these guys up. But I should have woken those guys up.
Dude, I can't imagine what the Sincerely Yours tour would have been on too. Like we originally planned. Because, dude, we were already packed in like sardines. It was bad.
Yeah, I got real lucky that my mom had cancer for a minute.
Jesus.
It's okay to joke about now because it's gone, but
yeah,
it's always funny to see people's faces when I joke about it.
God. Why couldn't my mom get cancer? Jesus,
Billy,
Dominique.
How come you didn't have to go on tour? Well, my mom got cancer. Well, my mom got COVID.
Oh, my God.
Gotta defend that. I'm bad at podcasts. There's actually one that I did when I was drinking where I did a whole Schindler's List musical. I'm not good at podcasts.
Well,
I'm in the wrong genre. Like, I just need to start like selling dick pills and like talking about liver protein, so whenever like the intrusive thoughts go through, I don't have to worry about like anything like
that. My friend Robbie, who's the vocalist of Burn Absolute, he actually, his full-time gig is producing podcasts and media for like big brands. He has his own horror podcast, and damn, this dude makes bank off of it. Like, he gets paid like $600 to do an ad spot. Like, it's kind of crazy. Yeah, that's why he was like, man, I'm just going to send you tour managing stuff because it's honestly not worth it for me to not do ad spots instead of going on tour. So that's pretty dope. Like, podcasts can be lucrative, just not the way I do it.
We're not getting that sweet, sweet, sweet anchor money on here.
You could use Anchor to build a podcast straight from scratch.
There we
you
go.
You can start an episode, you can insert Spotify tracks, and you can publish it all in one. You can even use an RSS feed to send it to Apple Podcasts and Amazon Music. Now pay me, bitch.
Dude, I'm waiting for the day. I'm waiting for the day that this podcast does get sponsored. And Jackson does, and he turns on the recording and he's like, hey, welcome to this ain't a scene. This is a podcast. This episode is sponsored by, and just like he's gonna go off.
It's gonna be the craziest segue. Now, speaking of AIDS, have you ever needed aid in your retirement portfolio? Well, you can hit up Fidelity Investing.
I've never been called an auditor before, but thanks to manscaped.com/this ain't a scene, my balls have been getting confused for an otters every day this week.
You can use promo code RUMBLE to get 30% off your order for the Manscaper ball trimmer.
Dude, real talk. I need that. Egan has one. Says you know, it's the best fucking investment of her whole life.
I've heard mixed reviews on Manscaped, to be honest. Like, I've heard of people getting their shit absolutely cut up.
Damn, really?
Yeah, you have to not just, like, lawnmower it, which I know it's called the Lawnmower 3.0. But you have to just kind of, like, actually shave with it instead of through it. It's a mistake you made twice.
Well, I feel like that goes, if you're just like shoving a blade into your balls, you kind of have what's coming to you.
Yeah, I've just used a double-edged safety razor in the past and it never failed me.
I actually use like the Dove feminine version of it, which is only like $20 versus
12, like 60 like bucks.
Yeah. Sorry if I lost you your Manscaped sponsorship by talking about a competitor. But I will tell you that the Dove one, I don't know about y'all, but my taint grows faster than any other hair on my body, and that's the only thing I found that actually, like, helps.
Dude, okay, at a certain point, you just gotta throw in the towel. At least that's my experience. So, like, it's not getting better. So let's find a segue
here. That's my entire mantra when it comes to sex. Hey, it ain't getting better than this.
Speaking of feeling like things aren't getting better, the last song that I think actually the opener on this record, Wannabe, is one of my favorite songs I've written in a while.
Oh, yeah.
I did enjoy that song, yeah. It was good.
It sounds a lot better when it's manic live. And, the problem with, like, doing everything by yourself means that a song that has, like, 5 tempo changes in it, instead of programming it, just turns into 101 BPM. Just kind of split the difference. Mm. I think live, it's 180 BPM all the way down to, like, 60 BPM. For, like, the bridge. Yeah. It's a month. I think there's a Lawnmower 3.0 in the background of my audio right now, so I do apologize.
Well,
somebody shaved their balls in the outside.
When this chef said, I don't want to get better, I want to still be me, I felt that, bro.
I was so happy when I got to use that line. I rumble, I don't know how you write, but I, like, fill my notes app with just the most horrendous thoughts that I have. And It feels so good when I get to just like have like there is a notebook from like when I was starting to write music, like in 2016, that has "I don't want to get better, I want to still be me." And to finally get to use it 7 years later was so cathartic.
Yeah, I bet. Somewhere in my notes, I have like just a compilation of random lines that just kind of popped into my head, along with just like halfway done songs, which is even more infuriating to me, at least. I'm trying to find a good example.
I'll play two.
What's up?
I said I'll play two. I'm gonna find the cringiest one in my fragments folder.
All right, Jackson, do your stand up while we search.
Well, I went into songwriting and I basically wrote about all the people that wronged me and how I wish they would die slowly. But and I saw I showed Cody some of them too, and it was basically like, "You screwed me over. I hope you suffer the rest of your life," and basically stuff like that. I hold grudges forever, and I just want to see the people who have wronged me suffer for their entire lives.
Yeah, that's the theme behind the song "Bad Guy." I think my cringiest one right now is maybe I'm just high on life or Jesus Christ. That's my favorite cringe line so far.
I kind of like it. This one isn't very cringy, but I did kind of sort of rip it off from a band I like, but it's a particular line in that song that stuck out to me that I kind of reworked in my own way because of the situation I was in, and it says, "Don't forgive me if I don't tell you I'm sorry," and that's like a little cringe.
Yeah, but
especially from a four-bottom song. I'm trying to remember what song it is, but I think the front-bottom's line is, "I don't care if you're not sorry, I'll forgive you." And I was like, "Huh, I'm going to turn that around."
There's two moments of being a songwriter. The first one is when you accept that you're able to just steal everything you've ever wanted as long as you thesaurus it enough. And the other part is accepting that no matter what, you're just going to be cringe.
Oh, yeah.
And it's only when we accept the cringe that we're truly based.
True. Dude, banger tweet. Banger tweet.
I think you mean X.
No, I don't. I don't. Fuck that Elon Musk motherfucker. Oh no, now Tesla's never going to sponsor this podcast. No!
So, the final song of the EP, how do you pronounce it?
I don't know what my track order is. I do apologize.
It's MM.
Oh, did I actually just call it MM? Oh, Memento Mori.
Oh, that might have been how it's actually on the EP. I'm just looking at my notes.
Yeah it says Memento Mori right here.
Okay, thank God, because I have, like, so many, like, miscellaneous papers where it just says, like, MM on it, because that's how I write songs. Like, on my set list, White Rabbit is WW, which one of my old drummers finally pointed out was actually White Wabbit. So Memento Mori is a very terrible pun off of Memento Mori and the Mori Popovich TV show. And it's about, like, because the song is about how friendships die when either the person dies or your relationship does, whichever one comes first. And just kind of, like, how shitty that kind of stuff is. And that's actually a 2020 song, based off of, I originally got the idea for that one from listening to Ocean Breathe Salty by Modest Mouse. I don't know if you guys are big Modest Mouse heads on this podcast, but I worship at the altar of Isaac Rock. because self-loathing alcoholism is basically the entire Modest Mouse is a concept fan where the concept is just self-isolation and alcoholism. So I love it. And Ocean Breed Salty has a line of, if you wasted this life, why wouldn't you waste the afterlife? And I have, I had to learn how to do like a lot of talking people off the edge from my friend Ricardo back in high school into, I think we finally stopped talking when I was 20, so about 6 years ago. And it was a lot of one-sided friendship of me, like, literally pulling this dude from death to the point where I hadn't talked to him for 6 months. And I got a random phone call from a number I didn't recognize just asking me, hey, Ricardo's in my spare room dying right now. What do we do? I was told we were supposed to get a hold of you. And I was like, shit. Call 911 and lose this number, please, because I am officially done here. I like that I'm pantomiming for an audio podcast. And I definitely cribbed a lot of Ocean Breed Salty for the like chord progression, and 2020 was a lot of me playing around with a chord progression of just like every guitar player has a point where they like have a C chord that's usually in tune, and they just try to like move it up. You found like the G chord shape if you're going by Cage, but if you play it fully out, it's an E minor 7, and then just walking that down to the D9 to the C. And I found that in like 2020, and like was trying to make a riff off of it, and it's sped up. It's very like, but that tempo is like 150. And when I play it solo, it's about 90. So I think the record, we split the difference at like 120, 130. Mm-hmm. So I, yeah, like I said, I failed at the music theory degree.
Yeah, I just remember it being very catchy.
Yeah. I really like the idea of a whole, of an entire room of people saying that I'm not scared of dying, but I still don't want to die. And that's because I don't know about you, but I use music to find a lot of the relationship that I don't have with the community anymore ever since like I stopped being religious. It's like that meme where it's like, oh man, I used to think that I was deeply passionate about Christ, but it turned out that I just really like live music. And
yeah, I had that realization once too.
That's been kind of just my goal with music, is to like find that relationship with a crowd of people. And even if they're not singing all my words, like we can at least like get together and just like accept for a couple moments of like, hey, I genuinely want to die. Me too. Let's pretend that we don't want to do that and like find solace in like a community that we can be ourselves in. And that's honestly more what Memento Mori's turned into. I don't know about you, but for me, I just kind of rhymezone.com a lot of words for my songs and then try to find meaning in it afterwards.
Me too.
So it turns into like a lot of just nonsense, and like I can't really tell what a song's about until people start telling me what a song's about, because I don't. To me, it's just like, okay, this word here has a rhyme score of 87%. And so that's what we're going to do right here. And then somebody comes up to me afterwards and is like, oh, I'm really happy that I was able to finally like hear somebody like say this. And I was like, you got that out of that? Especially like White Rabbit is my most popular song. And I wrote that at a party to try to impress a lesbian, because one of my friends told me she was bi. There's nothing in that song for me. It's absolutely, utterly meaningless. I rhyme the words home and alone 3 times in that song. Funny enough, also a Kanye West influence, because it was Paul McCartney talking about how he was trying to play chords with only 2 fingers, and that turned into All Day by Kanye West. And I was like, talking to a lesbian, being like, Kanye West is trying to write. Paul McCartney's wrote a Kanye West song with only like these two chord with at least two fingers. So like you can do an E7 and an A minor, and that means that we're kind of probably in the key of C. And let's do like C, E minor, A7, F. And now I get people sad when I don't play that song, and it makes no sense to me. But people get more out of it than what I put into it, and that's more what my live show is meaning for me at this point.
Yeah, rad.
Well, anyway, it's getting to that time, guys.
Cody once again, Smith. Want to say thank you to me sponsoring this episode.
Yeah, use code Rumble for 60% off your Lawnmower 3.0. Well, we're anyway.
If you go through and show us your shaved taints, we'll send you a free Manscaped kit to one lucky listener / viewer. Just make sure you use # Manscaped Rumble in the Instagram comments, and we'll make sure that you get your ball bag looking smooth.
Hell yeah. Well, anyway, Cody Smith, I like to ask a question at the end of the podcast, and that question is, what is your best sales pitch to check out I Don't Want to Be Here Anymore?
Do you have deep... Hold on, I got this. Hi there, my name is Cody Smith. Do you have religious trauma? Have you been bullied every single day of your waking life from childhood even to adulthood? Do you find the mountain goats to be a religion that you think that you've lost? Well, have I got a product for you? Hi, I'm Cody Smith, the Project Cody Etc. If these problems have been affecting you, have you tried getting way too high at 3 o'clock in the morning and listening to I Don't Want to Be Here Anymore on all platforms? If you have, one, find therapy. Find God. Find something just to make sure you don't kill yourself. But also, maybe find my music. I hate all the music I've made, but if you get something out of it, I get something out of it, like sexually. So let's go for it.
I think that was the best one we've had.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I like how you said, hi, I'm Cody Smith, like two or three times.
Deeply, like, have the Billy Mays commercials ingrained in my soul. And he says name five times in the...
Billy Mays.
I counted.
Well... Anyways, thank you for joining us, Cody Smith. This has been This Ain't a Scene. It's a podcast. And I am Jackson. This is Ryan. Have a good day, everyone.